From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump capped off his party's convention, declaring that America is in crisis and he is uniquely qualified to rescue it. We get your reactions to last night's speech and look back on the, at times, rocky convention. Then at 9:30, Screaming Queens. That's the title of a film documenting the first known time a large group of transgender people fought back against police harassment. We meet the film's co-director. That's all next on Forum. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Donald Trump's address last night, accepting the Republican Party's presidential nomination, was his biggest opportunity yet to convince voters and tentative party leaders that he was ready and able to be president. Declaring himself the law and order candidate, he painted a picture of a crime-ridden America.
I have a message for all of you. The crime and violence that today afflicts our nation will soon, and I mean very soon, come to an end. Beginning on January 20th of 2017, safety will be restored.
In this opening half-hour forum, we want to get your reactions to the speech. Call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can post your thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, and on our website, kqed.org/forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Let me tell you who is joining us now. Scott Schaefer, senior editor of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, who has been in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention all week. Hi, Scott Schaefer.
Hi, Mina. Good morning.
Good morning. And also Jack Pitney is with us. He's professor of government at Claremont McKenna College, and he was former deputy director of research for the Republican National Committee. Good morning to you, Jack Pitney.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here today. You know, Scott, I want to start with you. You were on the convention floor last night. I guess for those expecting a pivot to a more general election message, they didn't really get one.
Not really. It was kind of a bonfire of the vanities acceptance speech, you know, portraying a country that is with rampant crime and chaos in the streets, sort of unchecked borders where immigrants who are here illegally are running around committing heinous crimes. And America is disrespected in the world. And, you know, there are some elements of truth to all those things, but it was a very black and white image of the country, very negative, very dark, and very much about law and order. And obviously, it was intended to be a way to sort of play on the fears that people do feel, some legitimate fears and sometimes overblown fears, but nonetheless, concerns about insecurity and terrorism and that kind of thing.
And Jack Pitney, do you think that this was effective to paint a picture of a troubled nation that has lost the respect of the world? I mean, is he betting that this is the message that will get him over the top in November?
Well, in the short term and in the convention hall, it probably had some effect. I remember being in the Astrodome in 1992 when Pat Buchanan gave his infamous speech, and it played really, really well with the audience. People were really excited.
This is his culture war speech, yeah.
Yeah, but in the longer run, speeches like this produce YouTube moments, produce lasting impressions that could end up backfiring very badly. Not just the content of the speech, but the tone and even the images of a really red-faced, shouting, angry man who literally at some points was replicating the gestures of Mussolini. So I think in the long run, this is not going to be a very speech that will be very helpful to Trump.
Right. Initially, it felt like he was kind of trying to tone down his usual swagger, shall we say, Scott Schaefer, but then it seemed to change to be more like Trump at his rallies.
Well, yeah, his first sentence was, "I humbly accept your nomination," which is, I think that was the end of the humility after that first sentence. But it was a speech that obviously, it was long. It was 75 minutes long. That was one of the longer speeches, acceptance speeches in decades. He read it from a teleprompter with some minor ad-libs, some interesting minor ad-libs, actually. I think Trump has been somebody who has been a different kind of candidate who has ignored teleprompters and made fun of candidates who depend on teleprompters like Hillary Clinton. It'll be very interesting, though, to see if part of that pivot to November includes teleprompters, because that when he goes off message, which is quite regular, he did it during the week talking about NATO, it can be a problem not just for him, but for Mike Pence and every other Republican who's going to be on the ballot, because the media are going to go to them and say, what do you think of what Donald Trump just said?
Right. And I was curious, as you were on the floor, what moments seemed to be less than universally well received?
You know, one that was interesting in that regard was when he talked about the game being rigged and that the special interests don't have your interests in mind. And it was didn't go over that well. And I think that's because I was looking up at all the luxury boxes and all the special interests who were sitting there. And there were many of them, including some of the delegates. So that was one that jumped out at me that, just either skepticism or, not really being on that bandwagon.
Jack Pitney, one of the things that has, been widely talked about after this speech is that he promised many things. I think I was watching the CNN analysis after the speech, and Axelrod said something along the lines of he was basically saying, I will bring you everything and I'll tell you how I'm going to do it later. Right. And so this, for people who were looking for any kind, do you think there are people who were looking for any of the any of the policies behind how he's going to accomplish things like introducing reforms for millions of new jobs, renegotiating trade deals?
Well, the people who are looking for concrete policy details just aren't going to find them with Donald Trump. A lot of the speech was about law and order, but the hard fact is there's almost nothing a president of the United States can do about law and order, which is primarily a state and local responsibility.
Right.
And as the fact checkers have pointed out, his comments about crime are at best seriously out of context. Crime has been dropping for many, many years. But still, his most fervent core of supporters are very much inclined to believe anything he says, and they're really not all that interested in the policy details. So he's going to have his very much fervent and excited constituency in line.
So then do you think he will get a big bump out of this? I don't know what the latest numbers say, but typically candidates do. But then I was also seeing political analysts say that this will neither help him or hurt him very much.
Well, candidates typically do get, on average, a 6-point bounce. I wouldn't be surprised to see his numbers to go up for a few days. Even in 1964, the Barry Goldwater extremism and defense of liberty speech, Goldwater got a 5-point bounce even after that. The trouble is the lasting impressions generated by the convention and the acceptance speech will keep coming back in attack ads and conversations, and that's the real danger for Trump going forward.
Well, let's see what impressions he left on our listeners. Elaine in Salt Lake City. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. What'd you think?
Just kind of in comment to that, so I'm a police officer in Utah, and I just found myself really wondering how the nation's public can view a speech like that, yes, it would be wonderful to have an end to violence and have everyone feel safe every day for the rest of their lives, but I just don't see how realistic it is for a candidate to be promising or making statements about his ability to provide that for every citizen in the United States.
Elaine, thanks for sharing that. And Jack Pitney, it does underscore the point you were making about how much control a president really has over crime in different parts of the country. And he was mentioning things like, if you are somebody growing up in the inner city, I think in Baltimore was one of the cities he mentioned, that he was going to really think about you and that African-Americans and Latinos are hurting. Was this some way his attempt to soften his rhetoric around, to soften himself a little bit for the general? I mean, are these some examples of him trying to broaden his tent?
Well, I'm sure his speechwriters inserted that in the hopes, not that he would appeal to African-Americans or Latinos. He's going to get virtually no African-American or Latino support, but perhaps to a small number of fence-sitting white moderates who want to hear that kind of rhetoric. But I'm sure that in the weeks ahead, Trump and his supporters are going to say lots of things that will make it very difficult for him to drive that message home. For instance, David Duke was very enthusiastic yesterday in his tweets in support of Donald Trump.
Yes, he was. Right. He basically was saying he couldn't have said it better myself. Sorry, say that again. Scott Schaefer?
No, I was just saying David Duke also this morning announced he's running for the U.S. Senate in Louisiana, so that's not helpful. But if I could say just one other thing about the safety, I thought the phrase safety will be restored, period, is sort of an ominous, sort of a sci-fi message. And the other thing he said was the violence will end soon, very soon. It just conjures up, I mean, I don't know how he would do that in reference to the caller sort of made that point, but it just it is a very muscular kind of promise that he's making.
Yes, definitely. And it also had the sense, I think I remember in Ivanka Trump's speech, Donald Trump's daughter who spoke and introduced her dad, there was one point where she said, on January 17th, all things will be possible again. So, you know, just there are just these really broad statements about how everything is going to change and how, you know, Donald Trump will be sort of a savior kind of figure from violence and any other ills or fears that people might have. And Scott, do you think that will hold through the rest of the campaign season?
Oh, I'm sorry, what will hold exactly?
This notion of him as a savior, I mean, it feels like something that's relatively easy to poke holes into.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what he has going for him, though, is, you know, there's always been talk about the October surprise, some event in the world that no campaign can anticipate. In 2008, it was the mortgage meltdown and the collapse of the economy. Obama stepped up and McCain suspended his campaign and looked out of control. You know, there are so many things that could go wrong in the world between now and in November. And I have a hard time seeing how Hillary Clinton would benefit from any of them. And so I think he's banking in some ways, Trump, on a world that is, you know, it's a troubled world. And we can't control everything. And he certainly can't control everything if he wins. He'll figure that out very quickly. But I wouldn't underestimate the fear. You know, fear is a very powerful emotion, and that is clearly what he's aiming at exploiting.
And especially with the news as it's been in the last month, so heavy and hard, fear is definitely an overriding feeling, it feels like, these days. Jay in Dublin. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. I am a Hillary Clinton supporter, but I'll tell you what, Trump is a very compelling speaker, and Hillary just doesn't evoke the same passions that Trump does. For example, what is so wrong about clamping down on illegal immigration? And even if we did temporarily ban immigration from a country like Saudi Arabia, I wouldn't lose a minute of sleep over it.
Well, Jay, thanks for sharing that and what you found compelling about what he had to say. Jack Pitney, what do you think about how his immigration comments will play? There were some who believe that he would actually pivot a little bit away from immigration after getting the nomination, but he didn't. He made it, you know, one of the main planks of his speech last night.
That's right. I think the caller is absolutely right. We ought to enforce our immigration laws. I don't think too many people are saying otherwise. The question is the means. And building this massive wall between the United States and Mexico has both a practical and political problem. The practical problem is it won't work and would be massively expensive. And the political problem is that many Hispanic Americans regard his rhetoric about it as deeply offensive. And where that comes into play politically is that turnout among Hispanic Americans has tended to lag non-Hispanic whites. I think that turnout is going to increase this year, and that's going to help tip several states into the Democratic column, like New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, Florida. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be very consequential.
Scott, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I just want to come back to what the caller said, because I think it's very important, the sentiment that he just expressed, Jay, the caller. I think there are a lot of things that Trump says that people quietly agree with. and clamping down on immigration, illegal immigration is one of them. Some concern about Black Lives Matter, which the Republicans called a hate group during their convention this week. And I think that there is a possibility that there are folks out there who that will see a kind of a Bradley effect. Tom Bradley, the former mayor of Los Angeles, when he ran for governor against George Dukmejian in 1982, he was leading in all the polls by about 5 points. And lo and behold, George Dukmejian won. Hello. And what they found later is that people lied to the pollsters. And
Hi, Jack. Pitney, are you saying hello?
Hello?
Not sure who that is, Mina.
Not sure either, actually.
Yeah, but my point is I just think that that there may be a sort of a silent agreement with Trump that may not entirely show up at the polls because these are very strong feelings that speeches like last night evoke in some people, and they may not want to necessarily talk about it or acknowledge it.
And maybe that's what Donald Trump meant when he said, I am your voice, the people who, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And he sort of twisted Hillary Clinton's slogan, I'm with her, and said, I'm with you. And it was an interesting turn of phrase, I thought.
Well, let's go now to Jack in Redwood City. Hi, Jack.
Oh, good morning, guys. I wanted to talk about Trump's comments on the LGBT community and the applause that it rendered in the floor of the convention. Do we think that that was pandering, or do we think that this party is now ready to embrace that community?
Jack, thanks for the question. Scott Schaefer, you want to take that first?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the interesting ad libs. You know, in the written speech that was handed out before he delivered it, it was just LGBT. And he added Q, which is questioning, you know, young people who are questioning their sexual orientation. And that was a surprise. And he said it with a, you know, it's hard to read somebody's mind to know what their motivation is. But he said, we are going to protect LGBTQ. And he kind of said it with a kind of a sarcasm in his voice, I thought. But and he said that he's going to protect the LGBT community from hatred and violence from other countries. And I think what most gay folks would tell you is they're more concerned about hate and violence and hostility from, you know, their neighbors and the community and their state government, depending on where they live. So we'll see how that goes over. I do think, though, that it was a bit of a crossroads to have a convention applauding that line. I don't think Mitt Romney would have delivered a line like that, and I don't necessarily think the crowd would have applauded it.
And also, I know what you mean when you said it did sound a little, I don't know, the way he said LGBTQ was, you know, a little ambiguous to some degree. What do you think Peter Thiel and his, support of Donald Trump and coming out as a proud gay person? In fact, I think we have a cut. Let me just play that for our listeners quickly so that, you know, they just have a sense of what this PayPal co-founder said at the Republican National Convention last night.
I am proud to be gay. I am proud to be a Republican. But most of all, I am proud to be an American.
I mean, it was remarkable how that went over. And I just wonder if his message of fake culture wars will only distract us from our, you know, from our real issues, like our economic decline, is something that you think was strong and effective.
Well, you know, I don't think Donald Trump, I'm sure Donald Trump, he lives in Manhattan. He lives in New York and has for many years. I'm sure he has many gay people working for him, knows them socially. You know, I'm sure he's not, or I would guess that he's not homophobic. He came out against that so-called bathroom law in North Carolina, you know, quite soon and just basically said, you know, don't worry about it. And so we'll see if he continues in that vein. I don't think Peter Thiel's comments, you know, I don't think anyone really knows who Peter Thiel is, and his remarks will not be long remembered. But yes, the fact that he was applauded, I do think it shows that there is a shift going on in the Republican Party, at least in some quarters. At the same time, though, who delivered the Pledge of Allegiance last night before it went on prime time? Tony Perkins from Focus on the Family, which is an extremely right-wing homophobic group.
Well, let me read you some listener reactions to Trump's speech. Pam writes, Trump said, I alone can fix it. Who says that? More importantly, who believes that? Christine writes, fear. So much fear. I don't want to live in that world. And another listener tweets, it was a great speech. I'd take him over corrupt government any day. We are a country of laws. And I go now to, it looks like Mike in Beaverton, Oregon. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I
wanted to talk a minute about his daughter's speech at Vanna, I think her name is. I'm a Clinton supporter, but I was extremely impressed by her speech. And for someone who grew up with her dad, Donald, she had a lot of really interesting things to say, and it looked like she was coming from her heart.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for bringing that up. Jack Pitney, we have you back with us, correct?
Yes.
So one of the things I think it's fair to say that Ivanka did nothing to hurt her father. And if anything, she really helps him a lot. And I think her role really was to try to bring in more millennials and women into the fold.
That's right. And taken in isolation, her speech was extremely effective. She's very eloquent, knows what she's talking about, very accomplished person. If she were on the ballot, I think a lot of the problems we're talking about wouldn't apply. But here's the danger for Donald Trump. The more he brings out his family on stage, the more he invites scrutiny of his family's life. It's fair, if he's going to talk about family life, it's fair to mention that Trump publicly cheated on and humiliated Ivanka's mother, Ivana Trump. And if he's going to talk about his father, then people are going to point out his father was arrested in connection with Ku Klux Klan activity.
Well, there's also what Ivanka brought out were things that Trump has not mentioned, which is, you know, equal pay for equal work, providing better child care and helping mothers, working mothers. I mean, these are things that we haven't heard him say before and, you know, raises the question of his position on entitlements, which seems to actually accentuate differences he has with the main platform of the Republican Party, Jack Pitney.
That's right. And his discussion of things like Social Security in many respects sounds more like rhetoric coming from the Democratic Party than the Republican Party. But the problem from a policy standpoint is, and you've mentioned this before, is the detail. He talks about we're not going to cut Social Security, we're going to increase spending on defense, we're going to cut taxes. How exactly do you do all this and make the numbers pencil out?
Well, let me go to Rod Nadeep, is that right, in San Jose? Am I pronouncing your name right? Go ahead, Rod Nadeep.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My comment is if someone from outside of USA doesn't ever track USA news and just listen to Donald Trump's speech, it would look like USA is one of the most disorderly, poor, and lawless countries in the world. And that is not the case. It's exactly opposite. What's going on is fear-mongering and creating FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And if you repeat a lie 50 times, people start believing it as a truth.
Jack Pitney or Scott Schaefer, do either of you have a sense in our very last minute of how the world is reacting to Trump's speech?
I haven't had a chance to listen. I think the world is kind of puzzled by Donald Trump, as far as I can tell. They don't quite understand what's going on in the United States. And, you know, I think there are many here in the U.S. that wonder the same thing.
Well, Scott, it's on to Philly for you next, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm boarding a plane soon.
Jack Pitney, when do you think we'll hear a Hillary VP announcement?
Very soon, and the word on the street is it's likely to be Senator Tim Kaine.
Well, that's another show for us to analyze. Jack Pitney, professor of government at Claremont McKenna College, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks also to you, Scott Schaefer, senior editor of KQED's California Politics and Government Desk.
Thank you, Mina.
Up next, we'll talk Screaming Queens, a documentary about the first known revolt by transgender people. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.